welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we are your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight, we're going to be discussing being gay in school, as a teacher, and as a student. In studio, we have our very own Greg Moralia, a man of many talents. Greg is the Dean of Career and Online Education at Napa College, and one of the careers that he oversees is the Police Academy. So we get to hear about Greg as a teacher. And he also teaches at the Police Academy as well. And tonight, Greg is our engineer, so he has double duty.
That's right.
Welcome, Greg.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I can't wait to get to talk to you a little bit. We also, on the phone, are going to have one of Greg's ex-students, one of the past graduates of the Police Academy. His name is Thomas Waters, and he'll be joining us from the South Bay. He's a student of Greg's who came out to Greg while he was a student at the Police Academy. And we're very excited to speak with Tom also. I mean, to come out to your teacher who's gay also must be something that probably all of us wish we would have had. So we're very excited to talk to Tom as well. But first, before we get to Tom and Greg's story, first we have news and events with no other than Greg Moralia, man of all trades, with Outbeat Radio News and Events.
Say, tell it like it is.
Good evening. This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, September 4th, 2011. In California this week, a judge declared a mistrial in the Brandon McKierney murder trial. McKierney was the 14-year-old boy who shot and killed Lawrence King in their middle school classroom in Oxnard back in February of 2008. The 12-member jury couldn't decide whether to convict the now 17-year-old McKierney as an adult for first-degree murder or involuntary manslaughter. The jurors agreed that McKierney's actions didn't constitute a hate crime, which the prosecutors had charged, even though King occasionally wore makeup and high heels and was called faggot by McKierney and some of his peers at school. A plea deal for Brandon McKierney looks less likely as prosecutors in Ventura County announced just Friday that they intend to retry the case of the 17-year-old. And a 13-year-old boy's suicide last year prompted lawmakers to pass a law on Friday that orders schools to stop looking the other way on bullying of students for their sexual orientation. The passage of Assembly Bill 9, otherwise known as Seth's Law, named after Seth Walsh, means public schools are required to create policies for addressing incidents of bullying. They're also required to state explicitly that discrimination based on sexual orientation is not allowed. The law passed through the state Senate on Friday and has already been approved by the state assembly. It's now headed to Governor Jerry Brown for his signature. Walsh, a 13-year-old from Tehachapi, California, was part of what seemed like a wave of suicides in 2010. Students widely acknowledged that he'd been bullied for a long time for being gay, and the federal government investigated the school for a lack of response. His death helped prompt a national outcry for greater protections against bullying. State lawmakers have tackled more than a dozen bills this year that expand the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Californians, even as the community's biggest fight for same-sex marriage continues to wind its way through the courts. While many of the proposed laws are still waiting for a final vote or the governor's signature, those that have been taken up in either the Assembly or Senate have passed easily, with the majority of Democrats voting overwhelmingly in support. Supporters of gay rights say that while much work remains, this year's votes are an indication of the drastic change in the tenor at the Capitol in recent years. The Capitol is now home to the largest LGBT legislative caucus in the state's history, with 7 out of the 100 members, including Assembly Speaker John Perez of Los Angeles, identifying as LGB or T. And here in the North Bay, Spectrum LGBT Center will host two important events this week. Their Seen Through Film project will bring both the documentary film Jen Silent and its filmmaker Stu Maddox to Marin County. Jen Silent is a new documentary from award-winning director, documentary filmmaker, and Marin County resident Stu Maddox. What if you were old, disabled, or ill, and the person feeding you put down the spoon and explained that you're going to hell unless you change your sexual orientation? Sounds absurd? Well, according to social workers, it happens every day. The hour-long film exposes the challenges facing lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender older adults who must depend on a system of care that's reluctant to recognize their needs. In the film, we witness the challenges that these men and women face. We also see hope as each subject crosses paths with an impassioned professional in their own way who is trying to change an entire care industry. The two screenings will happen on Thursday, September 8th. The first is at the Margaret Todd Senior Center, 1560 Hill Road in Novato, at 10 a.m., and the second's at the Redwoods, a community of seniors, 40 Camino Alto in Mill Valley. Both screenings are free and open to the public. Next Sunday, Viva Las Divas, the American Dream Show, a drag cabaret, will benefit the Spectrum LGBT Center's LGBTQ Youth Support Program. The event happens on Sunday, September 11th at 6 p.m. at the Hoyt Theater in the Osher Marin Jewish Community Center, 200 North San Pedro Road in San Rafael. Premier reserve seating, tables of four, are $360 and include reserve seating in the first three rows and a VIP reception that starts at 5 p.m. Ticket holders get to meet the cast and get both an autographed poster and a CD of the show's music. General admission tickets are $75. All seats are reserved and include a light buffet, supper, and cocktails. There'll also be the Diva Silent Auction, which will offer many great items, gift certificates, and event tickets. For more information, go to spectrumlgbtcenter.org. And if you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, you can tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof, and I'm Sheridan. You can call me Cher, and that's Diana over here on my right, and you can call her Di. We have a special guest on the phone, and we're hoping he's there. Tom, are you there?
I'm here, Cher.
Hey, how you doing? It's always so fantastic when technology works.
I know.
And we're going to thank Greg for that. So, welcome. We introduced you as a graduate of the Police Academy at Napa College, and we also said that you came out to Greg during your time at the Police Academy.
That is true, I did.
Okay, so we'll be getting to you in a little bit. We are going to start with Greg for right now.
All right.
Okay, and we were really glad you're on the air with us for the whole hour.
Thank you for having me.
You can make sure that I don't say anything that isn't true.
Okay.
That's sweet. So, Greg, we're going to start with you because you're the big top. I don't want to say the top dog, but you are. You're like the dean of the police academy. But you're not just the dean of the police academy. You are out gay man in that leadership role.
That's true.
How is that? I mean, that's a big deal.
It's liberating.
Really?
You know, I think like many people have said on our shows before, when you come out and you are able to be your entire self, there's nothing to hide. People really know you for the whole person that you are. And then you can participate in the same conversations at work that everybody else does. What did you do on Monday morning? I went with my partner here and there. We did this and that. There's no barriers and there's no mysteries.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. I like the way you put that. So how do you, I just want to jump right in. How do you come out to your students? I mean, first day, second day? I mean, when did you start? How long have you been doing this position for?
I've been teaching at the academy for 25 years.
Oh,
this is my 25th year.
Have you been out all those 25 years?
No.
Ah,
no.
Can you?
I didn't come out, you know, in public. I've been out to myself for most of my life. I mean, I knew in seventh grade. But I started a law enforcement career when I was 15 and knew right then and there that there was not going to be possible to come out. And this is back in 1978. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't able to come out at all during most of my law enforcement career. I started teaching the academy when I was 23 years old. But I came out to the world, if you will, in 2004. And it was at that time I started coming out at work as well. So, and I haven't really told classes until pretty recently. I teach the human relations block, which includes topics like workplace discrimination and harassment, cultural diversity, all of those sorts of topics. And so it's certainly appropriate for the topic, but I meet them the very first week of school. right after the drill instructors have been yelling at them and teaching them how to march, and when they're all on a very heightened sense of self-awareness, I guess that you could say. Is that a good way to phrase it, Tom?
Fear.
Fear is the operative word there. And so I meet them, you know, right away, and I have classes with them throughout most of the academy periodically. My office is right in the academy building, so at least for the students that are there during the day, they see me every day. So it's really great. And I come out during my introduction as just like any other instructor would when they talk about their background and they talk about their families. I mix it up a little bit.
Can you tell us a little bit more? Give us a picture of how that looks?
Well, one of the things that I teach or try to get a good discussion going on during my blocks is what is bias? What are stereotypes? What is prejudice? What is bigotry? And what does that all look like? And how does our experience and our education and our life history impact the way we see other people? And what we, as police officers, you make judgments about people based upon how they look, how they behave. But what I try to remind the students of is you could be wrong. So I go through my career and I talk about all of the things that I've done, working on the street and teaching firearms for 10 years and teaching chemical agents for 10 years, and I butch it up a little bit. But I try to be very unstereotypical, or should I say rather stereotypical straight. And I think for Tom's class I did this. I took my wedding ring off and put it in my pocket. And then I asked the students, do you have anything else you want to ask, anything else that you want to know about me? And typically a student will raise their hand and ask, do you have a family? And I'll say, well, why can't you tell that about me? Well, we don't see a wedding ring. And then we talk about the symbolism that goes along with a wedding ring. And then I ask, what assumptions do you make about those wedding rings? What does that really tell you about someone? And we eventually get to the point of it really doesn't tell you who you're married to. It doesn't tell you the gender of the person. It doesn't tell you the nationality or race of the person. It just tells you or suggests that the person could possibly be married, and it's one of the symbols in society. And so we eventually get to the point where I tell him I'm married, and I'm married to a man. And his name is Tony, and he's a fifth-grade school teacher, and it becomes very normal. And then the real conversation begins.
I mean, what was it like when you told – you said you've only been doing this for a little while. So about how many years have you been coming out to your classes?
Tom, I think your class was the first class that I did that with.
Oh, okay.
Where I came out right away. So it's only been a couple of years.
Wow. So how is that for you, Greg? I mean, it sounds like you said it was liberating, but when you first told your class, you know, I am married and I'm married to a man and his name is Tony and he's a fifth grade teacher, what was the temperature in the room?
There was a collective dropping of jaws. Tom?
Yeah, let's hear from Tom. I want to hear his experience.
No, I think it was, there's definitely a collective dropping of jaws. I mean, even my own, because I, you know, was not out to anybody. I mean, that was like probably within the first week or maybe the first 2 weeks that you introduced yourself.
Right.
So, you're still getting used to everything, you know, and it's still very stressful. You know, the first couple of weeks are the worst. So, you know, when I heard it, I was kind of like thinking, uh-oh, like, you know, this is going to, I don't know. It just, you know, whenever somebody's talking about, you know, being gay, and especially in the police academy where law enforcement in general is not gay friendly. I mean, it's getting better, I think, in certain areas, definitely in California and the Bay Area. But it's definitely something that, you know, with me in the academy, it was tough. But I think the class they were definitely shocked, especially, like, you know, I remember after the break, you know, after he told us, they're like, well, how can he be married? You know, like, it's like, well, it was legal for a little while, you know, and it's like, it was just kind of like, wow, certain people don't really know anything about, you know, the gay culture, you know, or gay, you know.
So, Tom,
issues in politics.
I just wanted to go back to when you went, uh-oh. I'm curious about what that uh-oh is about.
That was just kind of, I don't know, I guess it was a fear with me, like, oh, no, now, like, you know, he's going to be able to pick up that I'm gay, or, you know, somehow it's going to come out that I'm gay, and that's going to affect how I perform in the academy or how people treat me in the academy.
So I was curious about that too. So when you went out into the hallways after Greg said his thing, you know, and you heard your colleagues or whatever, your peers, talking about it. So how did you feel amongst them?
I mean, it was okay. Most of them were like, you know, they're still talking like, you know, oh, well, you know, they didn't see that coming. They're like, well, that caught me by surprise, you know. And so I was more of just taking the stance of I was just kind of listening. I was kind of listening to what people were saying because this was, you know, 52 people that I was going to be spending the next year with. So I was kind of just taking mental notes like, you know, okay, let's see what people say, you know, who, like, you know. So, I mean, it was different, but I think most people actually took it pretty well. It wasn't until, you know, some time later that we had it was an anonymous survey, and there were some questions in there, you know, like, you know, if you had to choose somebody that was going to be babysitting your child, and you had to choose, you know, like a straight woman, you know, a lesbian woman or a gay man, and going out after break and that. And people were kind of like, well, I wouldn't want a gay guy babysitting my kid. And then you heard some straight guy say, well, you know, he'd probably be the most caring, nurturing person. So it was interesting, but I was never super comfortable, like, at the beginning to be out. So it made my jaw drop and go, uh-oh, I just hope this doesn't, you know, force me out to the class.
I can really understand what you're saying, Tom, because as a school teacher myself, when there was not anything in the headlines about gay this or gay that, I was really comfortable. And once it started hitting the newspapers, you know, gays in the military or gay marriage or something back in the, let's say, early 90s, mm-hmm. I started getting really weird because I knew people would be talking about it. And then that would force me to either talk or not talk. And what would they say if I didn't? And what would they say if I did? And
yeah, exactly. I think you put it perfectly, because it's kind of like when you're not talking about it or it's not in your face, it's like, okay, I don't have to deal with this right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, definitely when he did that, I was like, uh-oh, now it's out in the open. People are going to get talking and, you know.
Very interesting.
So
coming back to you, Greg, I'm very curious about your own process. You said you've only been doing it a couple years, coming out to your classes.
Right.
I'm curious what made you decide to take the leap.
Well, I think if we're going to talk about sharing invisible differences, which is part of what we do in the police academy, to create some awareness around the differences in all of us, both in the workplace and that exist out in the community, that it's important to provide some good examples, some live examples, if you will. But I also think for people like Tom and the other LGBT students we have, we try to present instructors across the board. We have male instructors, female instructors. We have instructors of various nationalities. I think it's important that they have a role model. And I recall one student who's a good friend of Tom's and mine, Ben Smith, who's a San Francisco officer now. One of the things he told me is when he was in the academy, sitting in the very same classroom that Tom was, he said, I thought I was the only gay cop in California, the only one ever. I never imagined, you know, that there would be others. And so for students who are struggling coming out or haven't really, you know, figured it out for themselves yet, I think seeing role models is important. But it definitely has been a very positive thing. I think my relationship with students is much more honest. It's much more complete. We have extremely positive and candid conversations, and they're able to ask questions and find out about this particular segment of the community, like all the others, that they're going to be serving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really like how you talked about if you come out or when you come out, that you're allowing people to know you as a whole person, as an entire person.
Right.
And you're not keeping yourself a secret. And I think that is important for teachers to do if you want them to do the same thing.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Sure, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the piece on the role modeling because, and I'm thinking about Tom. You know, Tom, I know you're a little shaky when you first heard Greg come out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm just imagining myself sitting there and my teacher would come out, you know. I would be like, oh, wow. I mean, so I'm curious about that side of it. Did you have, like, a little bit of, like, oh, okay?
Definitely, because, I mean, definitely at the academy, Greg has been there for so long, and he's definitely respected by a lot of the instructors there and, you know, the director there. They've worked together. So it did put me at ease somewhat, you know, to just know that, hey, it's okay. You know, it's not, you know, it's not the end of the world and everything like that. And deep down, you kind of know, even though it's like, I don't even know Greg yet. I, you know, have not, you know, he's in front of the class talking to us all, but I have not, you know, yet, shaken his hand or anything like that. It does help to know that there is a support system there that, you know, if something happened, you know, related to, you know, my sexuality or something that I needed to talk to, that I could talk to him, because he would definitely understand. You know, you can't take a problem like that to, you know, a straight instructor, you know.
Well, how long did it take you to come out to Greg?
Let's see. I think it was on that L.A. trip. There's a trip we do, or the Academy does, down to the Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles. And I think that was maybe, I was in the year-long Academy, so started in September, and I think we went down there in
March.
It was March?
Yep.
Okay. So, I mean, it took me a while. It was, you know, definitely, what actually happened is I have a friend that's a deputy for, I don't know, should I say the agency? I've never been on the radio before.
Yeah, he's a deputy with the Alameda County Sheriff's Office.
Yeah, so it was on our Christmas break, and he, you know, him and his boyfriend and some other friends were, you know, were going to the wine country. So, I mean, I think at that time I was kind of a little bit relieved because I was still, you know, not out and open or anything like that. And then once we went down to the L.A. trip, we were walking to the museum, and Greg was free at a corner, and I went over there and kind of mentioned, hey, you know so-and-so with Alameda County. Yeah, I was like, you know, I know him too, and, you know, you were supposed to be there on the wine trip, and you weren't. So he was kind of like, okay.
It all makes sense
so it was,
now.
It was kind of coming out without saying
right.
Hi.
Right. Wow. So you were – so it took about 6 months for you to decide that that's what you wanted to do. How did you feel after?
I actually felt really great. I didn't – you know, I never came out to the class or anything like that. I always kept it hidden into myself. I came out to Greg, and the same day that we were flying back, I came out to another cadet who's the only other, she was the only lesbian in the class, and, you know, we were talking. So it definitely felt, I felt more comfortable with it, and I think after that point, I got to the point where I was like, you know what, I'm not going to, you know, announce myself to the class. However, if anybody came up to me and asked me, you know, hey, you know, are you gay? I totally would have been, you know, yes. But, you know, I think it's not something easy for them to ask, but I was just kind of more focused, like, you know, I just want to get through this with minimum fuss, and, you know, I, even though it's, Napa is probably one of the best academies, you know, if you are LGBT, I mean, I was still very much a little bit scared, you know, and just kind of wanted to get through under the radar.
Yeah. You know, we do have to take a music break right now, but what we're talking about is we're talking about, okay, once you come out, what's the aftermath? Like, what's the fallout, right? Are you going to be safe? Are you going to be sorry? Are you going to be excited? We have a song that we want to play for everybody by Adam Lampert, one of our most favorite singers. He does have a song off his Glam Live CD called Aftermath, and we'd like to play it for everybody right now. And we'll be back right after the song is over. So stay on, okay, Tom?
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Have you lost your way? Shadow of the messes that you made. And so it goes. Everything inside your circle starts to overflow. Don't
inside gonna tell you you'll be alright in the aftermath. Contradictions that you live with every day. It's not too late. Think of what could be if you rewrite the role you play. Take a step before you leap into the colors that you see.
If you're just joining us, that was Adam Lambert singing his song Aftermath off his Glam Live CD. Great song choice. We are on the phone with Tom Waters, a student of Greg Moralia's at the Napa Police Academy, a recent graduate. Tom, you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
And we are also in studio with Greg Moralia, dean and teacher at the Academy, Police Academy at Napa College.
You bet.
So, Tom, we're going to get back to you because we're thinking especially about safety at the Napa School, the Police Academy, and you talked about how safe it was and having your teacher and the dean of the school, of the Police Academy, come out. We're just curious to why, you know, like what will it take for an LGBT person to come out? So why wasn't it so comfortable for you? To come out to your peers?
I'm not sure. I guess it's for me. I've always been, you know, I came out of the closet late in life. I was, I guess, 24 years old, and it was something that, you know, I'm still grasping, trying to get a hold of everything, and, you know, I'm not 100% comfortable with, you know, certain coworkers and stuff like that, so I'm not 100% out. It's something that I guess I just tried to avoid. I was, you know, at the police academy, it is tough, and NAPA does its best job to make it comfortable and, you know, make it a safe place. However, when you're dealing with, you know, a lot of these, you know, straight guys that are butch macho, some of them, you know, ex-military, and the locker room banter that you hear, it's kind of like, it's doesn't always make it so comfortable, and I just kind of wanted to, I guess, skid through with, you know, minimum fuss or anything.
Were you ever harassed or anything during school? I'm just curious.
No, I was never harassed. There was, like, a few comments by, one student in particular that I think was geared towards me. He was, you know, he made a comment, you know, we were doing some laps around the track and, you know, just trying to practice getting out radio codes, and he was chasing me and saying that he was chasing, you know, a 6'5", you know, transgendered woman, and, you know, I pretty much kind of almost stopped to try to, like, knock him down because it had really, you know, pissed me off. So I think he was just trying to get a reaction out of me, and obviously I gave him a reaction, but certain things like that. But I don't think I was ever really harassed, you know, to the point where it made me not want to come to school or anything.
How is it for you to hear this, Greg?
Well, the interesting thing is that events like that, unless they're brought to our attention, we don't hear about them. We'll hear the stories afterwards, and that's always interesting for me. But, you know, Tom's situation is not unique in that, despite our best efforts, I usually only find out about the LGBT students after they graduate. I'll get an email, or I'll get a phone call, or maybe they'll even stop by. We know they're in every class. We know they're there. But, you know, the other thing that I think I have to remember, too, is that college is a time, like Tom, when a lot of people do come out for the first time ever. You know, most of our students are in their 20s, and you know, despite what you read about youth coming out at 12 and 13 and 14 years old these days, there's still a lot of young people that come out in their 20s. And, you know, Tom, you weren't a late bloomer at all. My goodness, I came out when I was 41, so don't feel bad, my friend. So, you know, it's a tough time, and it is a very tough and very competitive environment. And in law enforcement in general, not in every department, but in most, I would say, there's still a lot of homophobia.
So I'm curious about the school, Napa College, within its own infrastructure. What does Napa College do to support LGBT youth?
Sure. Well, we're a two-year community college, so we have a very regular turnover. We don't have students living on our campus like a four-year university. Mm-hmm. We have a very transient population. I will say that in the time that I've been at the college, and certainly the presidents that I've worked for have all been committed very much to inclusivity and have been very sensitive to diversity issues. What's interesting is I think we're just really now, over the last year or so, starting to pay very close attention and having lots of conversations on campus about how do we best support LGBT students, because they're not necessarily visible. We have gender-neutral bathrooms now on our campus for the first time.
Meaning men, women can use either?
Right. They are, in fact, single-use bathrooms, so that if you are a gender questioning or you project your gender differently, you can choose the bathroom, you can choose a safe place. But that's brand new. And we do have some transgender students on our campus. So we're paying attention to those things. We're paying attention to things like the National Campus Climate Index that Campus Pride puts out that has some very strong suggestions about what colleges should be doing. For example, having visible gay-straight alliances, a lot of the things that the high schools have already done.
Meaning you don't have a GSA?
We have had them in the past, but it's been like a student, any other student club, which means that the students have to come forward and create the club, find an advisor to sponsor them, and then register their club with the Associated Student Body. How does a closeted or questioning young person come forward and do that? How do they seek out a staff member to be their sponsor? So we're still trying to figure out how to make that happen.
I'm curious about as far as safety and coming out. Greg and Tony, you can answer this too. I mean, is there any way that you can, like, send surveys when they leave? So, and I would like Tony to answer this question. I haven't put the question out because I'm thinking about it because it's really important about what would have made Tom feel safer to come out? I mean, you know, with the support, what did he need to, you know what I mean? And that's what it would be really important to do some kind of survey when your students leave, like, because you know there's a lot of them probably, you know, 10-20%.
I'm going to be curious to hear what he has to say, but I'll tell you that he and Tom mentioned a survey that we do with a class. It's an anonymous survey, and part of that is asking them to identify some of the invisible differences about themselves. And we do ask about sexual orientation and gender identity and parents. We ask about a variety of things, but those are included in the questions. And we periodically will get someone who will identify as being LGBT or transgender. We actually have a student who identified as being transgender. I have no idea who that is because it's an anonymous survey. But we are beginning to see students identify that they have two moms or two dads as well. But that's more for the sake of having a discussion about invisible differences in the workplace. What it tells us, though, is that we have LGBT students in our classes. They may not be visible, but we know people are self-identifying. But I'm curious, Tom, what would it take to make it a safer environment for a student to come out?
I mean, I think the environment there is very safe, and it definitely helps to have, you know, someone like Greg there that, you know, is, you know, definitely well-respected and is a member of, you know, the gay community. However, I'm kind of one of those ones where I guess it's like I'm a hard nut to crack, where it's just kind of, you know, I prefer to keep my life very private. But I think you guys have been doing a good job. I remember within the first week of the academy, which, like I said, can be one of the most stressful times, there is a project that we have to do during the academy, our community policing project, where you do a report and a presentation on a community that you're not familiar with. So if it's somebody that's not familiar with the, you know, gay men or lesbians or, you know, different ethnic groups, they can do that. Now we had some people that were discussing it in the locker room, and, you know, somebody said, "Oh, well, I want to do it on transgendered." And, you know, somebody had cracked a joke, "Well, oh, I've always wanted to do a transgendered." And this is the first week, and I'm going, "Oh, great, here we go. Here's this locker room stuff," and, you know, it started already. It hasn't even been a couple days, and it's here it is. And I was really shocked to get a phone call at home from the director of the academy, who, you know, had said that somebody had made a complaint, that I was listed as somebody that was there, and he was very upset about this. He was not happy that it had happened. He's, you know, measures were taken, and those people were pretty much punished, and, you know, some of the class leadership was shifted around. And that, after that phone call, I'm nervous talking to him because this is the first week and I've got the director of the academy on the phone with me. But definitely after that, I was like, wow. I was like, they're not playing any games here. If there's an issue, they're all over it. Which definitely made me feel a lot more comfortable.
How did the director find out about what happened in the locker room?
Somebody had made a complaint. One of the cadets. I don't know who that was, but, you know, I have a...
That's true.
I can assume who it was, but, you know.
Yeah, the gay comrade.
I think it was one of our... I think there was in the survey, I think there was, you know, one that claimed gay, one... And I think in the first survey at the beginning of the year, I claimed bisexual, because I was like, I don't know who's looking at this. I know they say it's anonymous, but I'm going to put bisexual. That way... Hey, I still like girls somewhat, but yeah, I think it was, you know, a cadet that had claimed or had identified, not claimed, as bisexual, and, you know, he did not appreciate the comment, and I'm glad that he did say something about it because I wasn't about to go up, you know, and make a complaint.
Mm. Wow, I think if the director of an academy called me and told me about something that happened in the locker room, I would have felt like really taken care of.
Yeah.
Like someone was watching over me, you know, and I didn't have to make the phone call, and I didn't have to be the person fighting on the front line like it's usual. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's terrific. Wow. Cool director.
Definitely.
You mentioned the locker room situation. One of the things that same director did, at least for our day program, is he moved the time for physical training from the morning until the afternoon. And that was done exclusively so that students would not have to go through the whole shower routine, that there would be, you know, sort of a minimal exposure, if you will. Because we've heard feedback from other students that the most difficult, challenging place was the locker room, and that was the one barrier that would prevent them from coming out because they didn't want to make their peers feel uncomfortable. So that to make potentially transgender students as well as gay and lesbian students feel more comfortable, we eliminated that whole shower thing.
I'm curious, Greg, are there other gay faculty members at the college?
There are. We have several that teach in the police academy.
Oh.
And as far as the greater college goes, some of those folks have moved on, the ones that I knew about. I don't know. One of my colleagues in the administration is a lesbian, but I don't know if we have any other out faculty.
It seems like when you say that we're starting, you said earlier in the show we're starting to look at that very carefully about how we can serve our LGBT students better. Were you talking about you at the police academy or you at Napa College?
College-wide.
So there's a lot of straight people that are trying to look out for LGBT people.
There's actually a movement statewide. The Statewide Academic Senate, which is the faculty association for community colleges, last spring started working on that, and they've been having a lot of conversation about it, as have a lot of different colleges around the country. You know, in 2010, when we had all those young people commit suicide, at least they were widely publicized, that caused schools to look, you know, and ask themselves, are we doing everything we can do to make students feel safe? You can't have that conversation without also talking about staff.
Right.
And so those conversations are continuing, and I think we've got a couple of initiatives this year that we're going to take action on early in the fall. A safe zone program, I suspect, will get put in place quickly. And we've already talked about that if a student were to come forward and want to form a GSA, that we would do everything we could do to support it and make it a publicly visible gay-straight alliance, not a club that meets in the closet, if you will.
Wow, it sounds like Napa College is really ahead of a lot of other colleges in California, two-year colleges.
Well, it feels terrific. Good that we're having those conversations anyway, for
yeah.
sure.
Boy. Hey, we wanted to get one more question in before we take another music break. Tom, you said that you were a late bloomer. You came out when you were 21, and then Greg said you weren't late. He came out when he was 41. Did I get you 24 years old when you
came
out?
Yeah, I think about 24 is when
How old were you when you knew about yourself?
Oh, early, probably about, I'd say about, you know, 10, 11 years old.
Mm-hmm. And then how long before you came out to your family?
It was pretty much 24.
Oh.
That I came out to my mom and everything.
Oh,
and
wow.
So it was something, I mean, I went to a Christian school growing mm-hmm. up, so it was definitely not an accepting environment. And it's like, even I started there in second grade, and it was kind of something that was always like, this is not right, you know. So it definitely had an effect on me keeping things in mm-hmm. and not talking about it with anybody.
So how was it finally to come out to your mom and any other family member?
It was stressful at first, but it was such a relief. I mean, because you're holding something in, and you're mm-hmm. always watching yourself. You're always, when you're talking with, if it was a friend that I worked with or somebody that I worked with, and I'm saying girlfriend instead of boyfriend, or I'm saying, you know, you're mixing your words up, and every once in a while it'd slip, and it'd be like, oh, I meant that. You know, I meant to say girlfriend, not boyfriend. Ha ha, that's silly. So, I mean, it's something you're always watching yourself, and it's to finally just to, like, cut that off. It's such a, it just frees you.
Yeah, frees you. Well, we are going to take a music break, and we are going to be playing for you, the listening audience, and for everybody here in the studio, the Glee version of Journey's Don't Stop Believin'. And what's really, really powerful about this version is that Greg has embedded Kurt from Glee coming out to his father. We thought it was a pretty beautiful thing. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a little bit after this song.
Just a small town girl living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going.
Jack, you're home early.
Deadliest Catch is on. What are you wearing?
It's a unitard. Guys wear them to work out nowadays. Do sports. They wick sweat from the body.
Football.
Yeah, all the guys in football wear them. They're jock chic.
Totally. Kurt's on the football team now. He's the kicker. That's the smallest guy in the field, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Britt and Tina were just helping me with some conditioning work.
Really? No, I played in JC before I busted up my knee, popping wheelies on my dirt bike.
Cool. I guess we'll have something to talk about then.
Just a city boy, born and raised in South Detroit. He took the midnight train going anywhere.
Nighttime skincare is a big part of my post-game ritual.
I don't know what to say about that, but I was really proud of you tonight, Kurt. I wish your mom would have been there. I mean, alive.
Thanks. Dad, I have something that I want to say. I'm glad that you're proud of me. But I don't want to lie anymore. Being a part of the Glee Club and football has really showed me that I can be anything. And what I am is, I'm gay.
I know.
Really?
I've known since you were three. All you wanted for your birthday was a pair of sensible heels. I guess I'm not totally in love with the idea, but if that's who you are, there's nothing I can do about it. And I love you just as much. Okay? Thanks for telling me, Kurt.
And that was Glee's version of Don't Stop Believin', with a little insert of Kurt coming. Kurt's one of the characters in Glee, coming out to his father. And if you just joined us, we have about 10 more minutes left of our show. This is Living Proof on Outbeat Radio, KRCV Santa Rosa.
Okay, this is Diana speaking. I want to get to you, Greg. I have something important I want to ask you, but this, listening to this clip makes me want to check in with Tony about, because he just talked about his mom coming out to his mother, and I'm wondering if your mother said something like, but honey, I knew when you were like 3 years old. Did you get anything like that, Tom?
I think my mom had known for a long time, especially when there was not much dating going on during high school or junior high. But actually, if I can go away from my mom and actually turn towards my brother, my older brother, who's 3 years older than me, he was probably the one that I was most afraid of, you know, finding out that I was gay, just because he's, you know, just your typical guy, kind of macho guy. And he actually made the biggest step to me. He confronted me on it. He'd always ask me, you know, oh, you're going out into the city, you know, where do you go? And I'd always say, oh, I'm going to the mission, you know, and, you know, never say the Castro. And finally one night he called me and he wanted to hang out, and I said, well, you know, I'm going out with some friends. And he said, you know, I know. And I was like, you know what? And he's like, you know, I know that you're gay. And I was like, oh. And I just said, oh. And he said, and it's fine. He's all like, I love you, you're my brother. It changes nothing about our relationship. Like, I love you no matter what. And I was kind of like, okay, bye. Hung up on him. So
wow.
I called him back in like 15 minutes, and I, you know, I was like, sorry about that. That caught me off guard, but, you know, and we met for lunch, you know, within the next 2 days after that, and we've actually gotten a lot closer.
Oh, that's what a terrific story.
I mean, he's definitely been one of my biggest, you know, he's got my back no matter what.
What's your brother's name?
My brother's name is John.
Right on, John.
Right on, John.
And my birthday, first birthday that I had in the Castro, he came out, he brought some of his friends, and he was pretty much like, hey, that's my brother. I love him. If you don't like it, you can get out of here. And I was like, wow. Surprising me every day.
Well, thank you for sharing that piece. Beautiful. Touching,
yeah.
Huh?
Very.
We're all touched in here. That's beautiful. We need more Johns around.
Yep, definitely.
Great big brothers. So, Greg, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
So what is that special something that stands out for you at the Academy? Because, yeah, what is that one special thing?
Well, you know, teaching is an amazing experience every day. I mean, you get something new out of it every time in the classroom. But if you would ask me, or if this is a question about what's the standout thing that we do now that I would have never imagined doing? Mm-hmm. It's bringing students to the Castro on a voluntary field trip. We do a cultural research project. I should give you a little bit of background, where the students have to pick a culture based on nationality, race, religion, disability, sexual orientation, or gender identity that they know nothing about. You know, police officers deal with different kinds of people every day, and so they need to be very culturally competent in as wide range of people as possible. So in that project, they have to go out and do 3 face-to-face interviews with members of whatever that community they choose happen to be. So this started out as a group wanting to go and meet some gay cops. We set that up, and then it has evolved into this now optional field trip that anybody in the class can go to. And so we go to the Castro and do a walking tour, talk about Harvey Milk. We talk about all the conflict that went on between the gay community and the police, because there is a rich history around that. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's where Pride came from, was a riot and a fight with police. We go to the new GLBT museum, and then we go and have lunch with this panel of LGBT cops that volunteer their time. I should say cops and graduates, because Tom comes along and now participates in that discussion periodically. And the students get to have very informal, casual conversation with all kinds of people who happen to be in law enforcement, and they get to ask whatever questions they want. I would have never, ever, ever imagined doing that. And it's one of the very popular things that we do.
Hmm. Do you have students write reflection papers?
They do. Yeah, the ones that do that particular community, they write an essay, and then they come back and they educate the rest of their peers on what they discover.
Ah.
And one of the things that we ask them to do is to examine their stereotypes. So when they get off Muni and they come up and emerge, you know, at sort of ground zero, I ask them, I want you to think about what you were expecting to see today, and then as we walk down the street, check yourself. Check your stereotypes. Are you seeing what you expected to see? Some of them they have these terrified looks in their faces because, for one thing, they may not have ever been to San Francisco at all, ever in their life, and now they're not only in San Francisco, but they're in the heart of the gay community, a place they never thought they would be. And so their visions of what they thought they were going to see, of course, are nothing like what they do see, which are normal people going about their day. You know, 2 dad families, 2 mom families, straight families. So it's always interesting to ask them what they expected.
Mm-hmm. What an education. That's in the field training, huh?
It is. And they really get a chance to meet some different role models in law enforcement. There's a sergeant who is a SWAT guy and a tactical commander guy who's done all of the typical very butch kinds of assignments and comes across in a very masculine way. And then there is a very successful but very effeminate officer that comes out and talks to them. And so they get this huge spectrum of people who are all doing the same job. So that's cool.
It's probably kind of mind-boggling because the stereotypes is the latter.
Right, right.
You know. Hey, Tom, did you go to the Castro as a student on the field trip?
I did not, no.
Mm-hmm. Did you choose not to, or did they not have it available?
No, I think they went on a Sunday, and I was working at the time.
Were you
working full-time during the academy, so I didn't have a chance to go.
Oh. Were you disappointed not to go, or were you happy?
I was kind of, I guess I was 50-50.
Uh-huh.
I kind of wanted to go just to definitely to meet some of the gay cops and kind of hear it from their point of view, because obviously that's where I'm going and I can relate to them definitely. And part of me at the same time was like, oh, I'm probably going to run into some friends, so this would just force me to just get it over with and be like, hey, I'm gay, yeah, so what? But, you know, I'm glad I did. After I graduated, you know, met up with Greg and some friends out and have, you know, met a lot of good people through that and, you know, have made a lot of really good friends that I'm sure I will be friends till the end.
I think the cops get as much out of it as the students do. Mm-hmm. Is that your feel, Tom?
I agree. Yeah, I think some of the, you know, some of the cops, especially some of the, you know, maybe the older guys or whatever, just, you know, they would never have expected this, especially when it's a cadet there that is not required to be there. They're not right. doing their project on, you know, the gay community. So I think they are kind of shocked because never in their wildest dreams, you know, maybe when they were going through the academy, would that have happened. So I think it works magic on both sides.
Tom, it seems like what you found in a wonderful teacher, now you have a friend. How is that to be friends to a wonderful guy like Greg?
Oh, it's great. I mean, like, I think I knew the day that I had come out to him in Los Angeles, and we'd spent quite a long time talking at the airport, that, you know, I knew that it was somebody special and that somebody that I would definitely be keeping in touch with, you know, long after I graduated and, you know, get into a career. So it's definitely great. Things happen for a reason. So, and I'm glad it did.
Well, I think that's one of the greatest gifts you get as a teacher, particularly working with adults, is you get to watch them go on and then check back in. And, you know, the greatest gifts I've gotten in my 25 years of teaching are some of the friendships now that have evolved out of that. And it is really great to watch people grow and succeed and do what they set out to want to do when they came to school.
Yeah. Hey, we could talk to you both all night, but we do have to close. We have about 30 seconds. Tom, what we like to do is ask you to give 30 seconds worth of advice to any LGBT student that's going to be going to the police academy at Napa College.
I would just say, once you're comfortable with yourself, you know, don't be afraid to let other people know, because these are going to be your future, you know, coworkers that you're going to be, you know, in possibly dangerous situations. So if there's one thing that I could do differently, is I would go back and I would have been more open with myself, more open with the class. And, you know, I think you might think people will think one way or the other, but I think people are changing, and it's for the better.
Mm. Wow, beautiful advice. We want to thank everybody for listening and tuning in to our back-to-school special. We also want to remind you that, like Greg and Tom, that you too can be living proof that you can have the courage to be authentic, to let people see the entire you, to let them know you as a whole person in any environment, whether it's school or anywhere. We wish you a great school year. We'll be back on October 2nd. Until then, good night.
As we approach the 10th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks, we'd like you to join us in reflecting how our country has changed. KRCB invites you to share your own observations and stories about how you've been affected from a personal or national perspective. Call our special September 11th listener comment line to record your thoughts and comments about the September 11th anniversary. Call 707-584-2050. That's 707-584-2050 to leave your comments. You're listening to KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. It's 9 p.m. New Dimensions is next.